Benet, Corot, Monet, Renoir, Caillebotte. We see a dancing Degas, a strolling Seurat, a brooding Van Gogh, once with his ear, once without. We see a Tahitian Gauguin, and Leonard starts to cry. He just stands in front of it and he cries, no words, just heavy tears running down his cheeks. I stand with him, stare at the painting, which is of a young Tahitian woman, supposedly Gauguin's mistress, wearing a simple cotton dress, white flowers in her black hair, a fan in her hand. I don't speak. Just let Leonard cry. He starts speaking. Gauguin was a stockbroker in Paris, married, had 5 kids. One day he came home from work and told his wife he was leaving, that he was through supporting the family, that he'd had enough. Just like that, he fucking took off. He said he'd always felt that he was a painter, so he moved into a rat-infested shithole and he started painting. His wife begged him to come back. His bosses told him he was insane. He didn't care. He was following his heart. He left Paris, moved to Rouen, went from Rouen to Arles, from Arles to Tahiti. He was searching for peace, contentment, trying to fill that fucking hole he felt inside, and he believed he could fill it. He died in Tahiti, blind and crazy from syphilis, but he did it. He filled his fucking hole, made beautiful work, made beautiful, beautiful work. Leonard wipes his tears away. It takes a brave man to walk away, to care so much that he doesn't care about anything else, to be willing to obey what he feels inside, to be willing to suffer the consequences of living for himself. Every time I stand before his work, it makes me cry. And I cry because I'm proud of him, and happy for him, and because I admire him. Leonard takes a deep breath, wipes away the last of his tears, turns and walks out of the room, out of the museum. Leonard leaves, goes back to Las Vegas. My life goes back to normal, or what I consider normal, which is as normal as life has ever been for me. I go to Kansas City, back to Detroit, Indianapolis, Milwaukee, 3 times to Milwaukee, North Side, South Side, Minneapolis. Sometimes I drive, sometimes I ride the L, sometimes I take a bus. My friends start to wonder why I occasionally disappear. I tell them that I need to be alone. I spend my days walking, endlessly walking. Spring arrives, I don't have to wear a jacket. The streets are crowded, outdoor cafes full, hot dog stands open on corners. I eat a lot of hot dogs. Extra mustard hold the relish. When I'm not walking, I'm reading. For a few hours a day, I sit and read. At home, on benches, on the grass, in parks, on the stairs of the museum, I sit and read. I read the classics, or what are called the classics, try to catch up on what I missed in school. I start to sleep more. I have fewer dreams. When the dreams come, they aren't as bad. I don't wake up shaking, bleeding, or vomiting. I don't wake up screaming, moaning, or crying. I gain weight. I look less like a drug addict and more like a poorly dressed young man. I go to a punk club to see a band called The Vandals. I go with my friend Chris, who used to deal coke with me. We want to see them perform some of their hits, which include the classics Anarchy Burger, A Gun for Christmas, and Tastes Like Chicken. They do not disappoint us. The guitars are loud and fast, the drums booming, the singer is on, his vocals moving effortlessly between yelling and very loud yelling. We march in the circle, high-stepping, throwing elbows, occasionally jumping into the middle and getting slammed. At one of the breaks, Danny and Kevin show up with a group of girls. Danny grew up outside of Chicago, in one of the wealthiest suburbs along the North Shore. He has known the girls, who are well-dressed and have nice hairdos and wear diamonds and pearls in their ears, since childhood. They look horribly out of place and uncomfortable. Chris and I walk over to them, say hello. Their names are Molly, Rory, Mila, and Brooke. I've met three of them before, though my memories of the meetings are faint. I ask them if they want a drink. One of them asks me what kind of beer is available. I tell her cheap beer. She laughs, says, okay, one cheap beer, please. I look at the other girls. They agree. They'd each like one cheap beer. I walk to the bar. Kevin comes with me. I speak. What's up? Nothing. What are they doing here? Danny wanted to bring them. And they agreed? I don't think they knew where they were going. How long do you think they'll last? They'll take one sip of the beer and leave. I laugh. I order the beers, wait for them, get them, turn around. Three of the four girls are still there, talking with Danny and Chris, looking at the club's other patrons, young men with tattoos, shaved heads, and mohawks, like they're zoo animals. I walk back, hand out the cans. I ask if the fourth girl left. I hear a voice behind me. My name isn't Fourth Girl, it's Brooke. Okay. I went to use the restroom. I chuckle. How was it? It was disgusting, and it was also out of order. There's a urinal in the men's room. No thanks. She takes the last can out of my hand, steps around me, moves toward Danny, starts talking to him. I turn back to the other three, start talking to them. One of them, her name is Molly, asks me how I've been, and I laugh, tell her it's been a rough couple of years. She says she heard, was surprised when Danny told her they were meeting me tonight. I ask her how she's been. She says good. She's working for an interior design company and going to school for architecture. As I talk to her, I keep glancing at Brooke. Her hair is blonde, almost white. Her eyes are ice blue. She's tan. Looks like she's been in the sun somewhere other than Chicago. She has pouty lips, perfect teeth, wears little makeup. I glance. I catch her glancing at me. I step away from Molly and toward Danny, and Brooke steps away from Danny, goes to talk to Molly. I smile. Know the little game that is being played here, a game that amuses me, that I haven't played for a long time. I step back and forth. She steps away every time I'm near her. She knows what I'm doing, doesn't acknowledge it, just steps away. Steps away. The music starts again. Chris and I move back into the circle. We throw more elbows, get slammed, sing along to all the hits. I know Brooke is watching me. I don't look toward her. Know that not looking will frustrate her. The music ends. Danny suggests we go to another bar. Everyone but Chris and me are anxious to get out of this dump. We agree to leave, pile into a couple of cabs. I purposely sit next to Brooke, light a cigarette, and ignore her. We go to the local option. Our other friends are there, some other people we went to school with. Everyone is in the back room, shooting pool. I lay quarters down on the edge of the felt. Next game is mine. I shoot pool and drink cola and smoke cigarettes for the rest of the night, and Brooke and I both work very hard to ignore each other. When the bar closes, I leave, start walking home. I walk alone. My friends take cabs. For the first time in several hours, I think about Lily. I have never gone so long without thinking of her. I feel guilty, as if I've done something wrong, as if I have somehow betrayed her. I turn away from home and I walk to her and I tell her I'm sorry and I cry. I hate myself for losing her. I hate her for leaving me. I don't have any answers. Two nights later, I see Brooke again. She's with Danny. I don't acknowledge her, don't say a single word to her. I'm not playing a game. I'm trying to be loyal, to be faithful, to honor Lily's memory. The next time I'm at the bar, I see her again. She's with one of her friends, someone I don't know. She walks over to me, speaks. Hi. I nod. You can't say hi to me? I can. I'm waiting. Hi.
How are you?
Fine. I turn, walk away, walk into the bathroom. It's empty. I open a stall door, close the toilet, sit down on the lid. I hold up my hands. They're shaking. I light a cigarette. It doesn't calm me. My heart is hammering. I'm nauseous, dizzy. I put my head in my hands, close my eyes, take deep breaths. This shouldn't be happening. I'm not ready for this to happen. I don't want it to happen. I want to be with Lily. I want to be alone. I'm safe alone, and I can't be hurt alone. My heart is hammering. She could hurt me. I stand, walk out, look through the bar. She's gone. Part of me is relieved. Part of me disappointed. I'm still rattled. My hands are in my pockets, still shaking. I leave, start walking. I want to talk to Lily, need to talk to her. I'm scared to talk to her. I walk for an hour, two, three, think. I buy flowers, red roses at a 24-hour grocery store. I lay them down, sit beneath them. I speak. Hi. I miss you. I'm trying not to, but I do. I miss you. I want to talk to you about something. I'm scared to do it, but it's going to come up sooner or later. I met a girl. I don't know her, really. I've hardly spoken to her, and I don't know if anything will happen with her, but she's the first person to make me feel anything since you left me. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I don't know what to do. If you were here, this wouldn't be happening. I wish you were here. I wish you hadn't left me. I hate you for it. But I'll forgive you if you forgive me. I love you and will always love you. But I want to see her. Forgive me. As I dial, my heart pounds, hands tremble. First ring. Second ring, I think about hanging up. She answers. Hello? Hi. Who's this? You know who it is. No, I don't. Yes, you do. It's 8 in the morning. So what? Why are you calling so early? Were you sleeping? No, I wasn't. Is there something I can do for you? You like baseball? I don't really think about it much. You ever been to a game? No? You want to go to one? When? Tomorrow? What time? 1? Cubs or White Sox? Cubs. Let me check my schedule. I laugh. Why are you laughing? Why don't you give me your address? There's a pause. My heart is still pounding. My fingers still trembling. 65 East Scott. What's the apartment number? There's a doorman. He'll call me when you get here. I'll be there at noon. I hang up. I smile. My heart pounds, my hands tremble, not because I'm nervous, not anymore. I stand, walk in a circle, smile, walk in a circle. I feel something other than sorrow and loss, confusion and uncertainty. I feel urges that I don't have to fight, that are not part of the horror of my former life, that are not going to kill me if I indulge them. I feel something more. Feel. I walk in a circle. I take a shower, smile in the shower. I spend the day walking around smiling, sitting in a park along the lake, smiling. I eat a huge banana split in the afternoon. I'm not full. I eat another one, smiling. I don't do anything, but when afternoon arrives, I want to sleep. Being lazy is very hard work and can be very tiring. I decide to try and take a nap. I can't remember the last time I took a nap. If I can actually do it, my body may be finally starting to recover, normalize. I walk into my apartment, lie down, sleep. Sleep comes easily. Deep, sound, dreamless afternoon nap sleep. When I wake, it's dark. I brush my teeth, leave, go to the bar to see if my friends are around. They're in the back room shooting pool and drinking. I see Danny. He walks over to me. You call her? Yeah. You gonna see her? I'm taking her to a Cubs game tomorrow. He laughs. No fucking way. Yeah, fucking way. How was the conversation? I called her and asked if she wanted to go to the game. The entire thing lasted about 2 minutes. I was distant because I know girls like her get hit on all the time, and if you're not distant, they're not interested. Do you know anything about her? I know her name's Brooke. I know you grew up with her. I know she lives in a nice part of town and she doesn't seem to have to work. I know some other things, but I'm not sure they're any of your business. Like what? I said I'm not sure they're any of your business. He laughs again. Come on. I know that she's beautiful. I know that I get nervous around her. I know that she feels whatever it is that I feel. Those are good things to know. Yeah. You want to know some more? Like what? She's from one of, if not the wealthiest family in Chicago. I could give a shit about that. She's also kind of tough and won't tolerate any bullshit. I don't intend to give her any bullshit. She's also really picky. No problem there, Danny. I'm the catch of the motherfucking century. He laughs again. If you ever meet her parents, I hope I'm there. Why? They're cool, but they're very conservative, old money people. They'd probably freak out if you told them anything about your past. I laugh. Spend the next couple of hours smoking cigarettes, drinking cola, sitting in the corner watching the pool table, occasionally talking to one of my friends. I get tired, leave, think about going to see Lily, walk home, decide to try and sleep. I need my motherfucking beauty sleep. It comes easily, I close my eyes, and I'm gone. I wake up early, shower with soap, put on clean clothes, get coffee, walk. I walk into the Gold Coast, which is the wealthiest neighborhood in Chicago. It sits on the near north side, along the lake and just above Michigan Avenue in the shopping district. The streets are lined with ivy-covered brick, brown, and graystone mansions built at the turn of the 20th century by rich industrialists. European sedans sit at the curb. Some of them have drivers in them. Women with children have nannies. Men wear dark conservative suits and carry rolled newspapers. I walk up and down the blocks, looking at the houses, looking at the street names, looking for East Scott. I find it. It runs parallel to the lake, a block off Lakeshore Drive. Compared to everything else in the neighborhood, Brooks Building is new, built in the 60s or 70s. 25 or 30 stories, simple white stone with large windows. I walk into the lobby. A middle-aged man in a coat and tie sits behind a reception desk. He looks up, speaks. Service entrance is around back. I'm not here to perform any sort of service. Can I help you with something? I give him Brooke's name. He asks me my name, picks up a phone, and dials. He speaks into the phone, hangs up, tells me she'll be down in a minute. I thank him, step outside, light a cigarette. I'm nervous. Scared. I have never been on a date sober. Except for Lily, I've never been with a woman sober. My time with her was spent in an institution where we were safe, where we were shielded from the temptations of the self-created nightmares of the outside world, where we could pretend we were normal, where we could dream we had a future. It's different now. Different because Lily is gone, because I'm alone, because Brooke and I don't know each other, because I'm vulnerable, because I can be hurt. The nicotine doesn't make me less nervous or less scared. It doesn't make me invincible. It gives me something to do while I wait for Brooke to come downstairs. I hear the door open behind me. I turn around. She's walking toward me. She's wearing jeans, tennis shoes, a sweater. She's smiling. She speaks. Hi. Hi. I drop my cigarette, stomp it out. Nervous. You ready to go? Yes. You want to walk or take the L? Do we have time to walk? Probably. Let's walk. We start walking. As we walk, we talk. The small talk bullshit of first dates. As we get closer to the stadium, the streets become more crowded. We don't have tickets, so I start looking for scalpers. I see three men on a corner pretending to be busy. I walk over, ask them if they have any tickets. One of them asks me if I'm a cop. I say no. He gives me a price. I hand him some cash. He gives me the tickets. Brooke and I walk into the stadium. I offer to buy her souvenirs, a hat, shirt. Perhaps you'd like a miniature bat. She laughs at me. We find our seats. They're in the upper deck along the third base line. We settle in. I ask her if she knows the rules. She smiles, says I've never been to a game, but I'm not a fucking idiot. They play the national anthem. The game starts. A minute later, a beer vendor walks up our aisle. You want a beer? Didn't you just get out of rehab? Not just, but not too long ago. Won't it make you uncomfortable? I'm not going to have one, but if you want one, you should have it. Beer is part of the great American baseball tradition. Okay, I'll have one. I motion to the vendor, pay him, hand the beer to Brooke. She takes a sip. How is it? Good. Thank you. Good. Do you mind if I ask you a question? Ask me whatever you want. Why were you there? Alcohol and cocaine. Are you an alcoholic? Yeah, I'm an alcoholic and I'm a coke fiend. I also have a record. What kind of record? Sold drugs, a couple of DUIs, vandalism, a couple of assault charges, all kinds of stupid shit. I'm sorry. No reason to be sorry. Wasn't your fault. Wasn't anybody's fault but my own. How long were you there? Rehab? Were you somewhere else? I went to jail when I was done. How long were you in rehab? Few months. How long were you in jail? Few months. Which was worse? Rehab was worse, and it was also better. My body was fucked from too much liquor and too many drugs, so I was sick for a long time, and the sickness was a fucking nightmare. Once I started to feel better, I had to decide whether I wanted to live or die. And that was a hard decision, because it meant coming to terms with a lot of pretty awful shit. After I made the decision, I met a bunch of cool people, and I started to get a bit more healthy, and it was kind of amazing. Jail was boring and occasionally scary and a waste of fucking time. How are you now? At this moment, I'm good and I'm generally okay, but those are relative terms. Compared to normal people, I'm a wreck, extremely troubled, extremely fucked up. She laughs. At least you're honest about it. If we become friends, you'd have found out sooner or later. She smiles. If? I smile. If. As soon as the game starts, the weather starts to turn. Heavy black clouds roll over our heads. We hear the quiet rumble of distant thunder. The temperature drops 5 degrees, 10 degrees. The sun is gone, the wind back. I look at Brooke. Think it'll pass? The weather here is crazy. It could be sunny in 15 minutes, or it could start snowing. You want to risk it, or you want to take off? The game just started. Let's risk it. We stay, but don't pay much attention to the game. I ask about her family. She has an older sister, a younger sister. She gets along with both of them. Her parents are happily married. I ask her where she went to school. She went to a small, private, liberal arts college. I ask what she studied. She says psychology. I ask her what she wants to do. She says she doesn't know. She's trying to figure it out. It starts to rain. Within 15 minutes, the rain turns to sleet. We're beneath the canopy of the upper deck, so we stay dry. But it's cold, and I can see goosebumps on Brooke's arm. I ask her if she wants to leave. She says, let's stick it out. 10 minutes later, I ask her again. I don't want her to be uncomfortable. She says, let's stick it out. I ask her again when the game is delayed, and a tarp rolled across the field, and she smiles and says, yes, I think we can leave now. We walk out of the stadium. Start walking back toward the city. We're both getting wet. I try to hold the program over Brooke's head. It doesn't do much good. I lead her away from the stadium, away from the bars, away from the people. She asks where we're going. I say, to a place I know. We run a few blocks. We try to stay under trees or awnings so that we stay dry. We go to a small bar. I have been to the bar before. It's a dive with a pool table. I know it'll be quiet. I know we'll be alone. We walk in. There are two people at the bar, and the tables are all empty. I ask Brooke if she wants a drink. She says, sure. I get her a beer. I get myself a cola. We walk to the back room, which has a pool table and a few stools. I look at Brooke, speak. You want to play?
Sure.
Do you know how?
Sort of.
Do you want me to teach you? You can give me pointers. I put the balls on the rack, hand Brooke a cue. You want a break?
Okay.
I take off the rack, hand her the cue ball, step back. She leans over, lines it up, cracks it. The cue ball blows the rest of the balls all over the table. Doesn't look like you're going to need many pointers. She smiles. We play for an hour. She slowly sips her beer. I drink 5 colas. We both smoke. She wins 2 games, I win 3. We talk easily. No uncomfortable silences. No awkward pauses. She asks me how often I want to drink and use. I tell her always. She asks me if being in a bar is hard. I tell her I can get alcohol whenever I want, wherever I am. There are liquor stores on every block. Being in a bar is no different than being anywhere else. She asks me if it's hard not drinking. I tell her it's miserable, that I spend a lot of my time crying, that sometimes I feel like I want to die. She asks me how I deal with it. I tell her I always know that at some point I will feel better, and if I'm patient and hold on, that point will come. She asks me what I want to do with my life. I tell her I have trouble getting through the day most of the time and I'm not really worried about it yet. She asks me how I make my money. I tell her I don't have much. I scrape by doing bullshit jobs. I'm open with her. More open with her than just about anyone else. But there are some things she doesn't need to know. And there are some things I'm not going to tell her. We leave around 5. We get a cab. I ride home with her. I spend the entire trip trying to decide if I'm going to kiss her. Though we talk to each other, I don't hear a word, don't have any idea what I'm saying. I just stare at her and think, will she let me? Should I try? Will she let me? Should I try? Will she let me? We get to her building. Get out of the cab. Can I walk you to your door? Don't expect to be invited inside. Who says I want to be invited inside? She smiles. Yeah, you can walk me to my door. We enter the building. Should I? Get into the elevator. Will she let me? She pushes the button for her floor, looks over at me. Thanks for taking me to the game. Thanks for going. She smiles. We don't speak anymore, just awkwardly look at each other. The elevator stops. Doors open. We step out, start walking toward her door. My heart starts pounding, my feet are heavy, I'm nervous, scared. I want to kiss her, don't want to get rejected. I think she'll respond, but you never know. Nervous, scared. We stop at the door. She speaks. This is it. You have a nice-looking door. She looks at the door. It's a plain gray door with a number on it. She looks back. I never noticed. It's nice. I like it. She laughs. Thanks for a cool day. Nervous. My pleasure. Scared. See you soon? Heart pounding. Yeah. She reaches out her hand. I take it. Pull her toward me. Kiss her. It is a simple kiss. Lips slightly open, a few seconds long. I pull away slowly, open my eyes. Brooke looks surprised. Sort of shocked. Sort of scared. I smile. Bye. I turn, walk to the elevator, push the button, the door opens. I step inside, wait for the doors to close. I don't turn around, look back, or look up. I leave her with the kiss. The door closes. I immediately smile. Take a deep breath, let it out. I push the button, the elevator starts moving down. A rush runs through my body, something similar to the rush of speedy drugs. A rush of pleasure, security, joy. A rush of hope fulfilled. A rush of love, or something that could be love. I step out of the elevator, still smiling. Leave the building, still smiling. I start to walk down the street. I think of Lily. My smile fades. Something inside hurts, something between the happiness of moving forward and the sorrow of letting go. I go to a florist, spend every cent I have on roses, red roses. I get down on my knees, lay the flowers before me. Hi. I saw the girl I told you about. It went well with her. I haven't felt good about anything since you left, but today I did. I felt good. I finally felt good. I want to see her again. I need to see what happens. I'm not going to come around so much anymore. I miss you, and I wish you were here, and if you were, this wouldn't be happening. I start to cry. You left me. I cry. You left me. Cry. I'm not going to come around so much. Cry. I see Brooke the next day. Again the next day. Again the next. We go for walks, go to the movies, go for cheeseburgers at a cheap diner. We go to a bar, shoot pool, smoke cigarettes. After a week, she lets me into her apartment. It's a two-bedroom with views of Lake Michigan. Nice, but nothing extraordinary. After 10 days, she lets me into her room. She has a soft white bed. She has clean, beautiful sheets. She has more pillows than she needs. We lie in her bed and kiss. Kiss. Kiss long and deep. We lie facing each other, our legs entwined. We kiss. We don't move beyond kissing. I'm not secure enough to move beyond. I tell her I'm scared, that she scares me, that my emotions scare me, that opening myself scares me. She asks about my past. I tell her stories about dealing drugs, about being arrested, about being addicted, about falling apart. I feel no pride in telling the stories. I feel no shame. It was my life, and now it isn't. I meet her roommate, Heather. Heather is nice to me, but I can tell that she thinks I'm a hoodlum, and I can tell that she thinks Brooke could do better than me. I agree with Heather. Brooke could definitely do better than me. I meet her friend, Ned. Ned is openly hostile toward me. He tells Brooke that I'm going to hurt her, that I'm dangerous, unstable, insane. We have dinner with him in an attempt to calm him down. He doesn't speak to me except to occasionally correct my table manners. I ask Brooke if I can kick Ned's ass. She says no. I stay with her for the first time. I feel safe in her arms. I sleep easily. No dreams. We rent movies, order pizza, hold hands as we walk, stay up late, watch the sunrise, sleep through the afternoon. See Danny, Kevin. They are both amused by what is happening between us. Kevin says it's just like the movies. I say, what movie? He laughs, says, Beauty and the Beast. I don't work. I don't know why I'm not being called. I don't know why I haven't had to go anywhere. I make Heather laugh, once, twice, three or four times. My sparkling wit starts to win her over. We both know Brooke could do better than me, but Heather starts to believe that maybe I'm not so bad. We have another dinner with Ned. I know he likes sports. I try to engage him. We talk about baseball, basketball, football. He loves the Chicago teams. I know enough to carry on the conversation. At the end of the night, while I'm in the bathroom, he tells Brooke that maybe he was wrong about me. Later, when Brooke tells me, I say that I am happy he said it, because if he hadn't, despite your objections, I was going to kick his ass. She laughs at me. I start to stay with her every night. I go home in the mornings. I shower, pick up my mail, replenish my supply of cash. I'm home one morning, the phone rings, I pick it up. Hello? Leonard speaks.
Harry motherfucking Houdini!
I smile. What's up, Leonard?
Where have you been, my son?
Been around.
Doing what?
Not much.
Ha! Ha!
I laugh. What the fuck is that?
I say ha! You've been running around with a little lady.
Maybe.
Maybe my ass. One of my reporters said you've been cavorting with a pretty young blonde.
One of your reporters?
I have people who report things to me. I call them my reporters.
And they watch me?
They check on you occasionally.
That's gotta stop, Leonard.
It's for your own good.
Stop having people watch me, Leonard.
Okay, I'll stop.
Thank you.
Have you been enjoying yourself?
I laugh. Yes.
Bet you don't miss working.
Is this why I haven't gotten any calls?
I thought you deserved some time off to concentrate on more important matters.
Thank you.
You seem to have done well.
Yeah,
I'm impressed.
What do you know about her?
I know she's very attractive. I know she's very rich. I know she's from an old blue blood family. I know you sound better than you've sounded in a long time.
You have someone watching her?
No, just did some checking.
No more of that.
I understand. No more. You're protective of her.
Yeah.
I'm happy for you.
Why?
If you're protective of her, it means you care for her. It's a good thing, a beautiful thing. If you're able to care for someone again,
you should come meet her.
Won't be any time soon.
Why?
I'm doing some deals right now. Significant deals. And I have to pay close attention to them. I'll come meet her when they're finished.
Okay.
Anything you need?
Nope.
You got cash?
Enough for a year. He laughs.
I doubt that.
I don't spend much.
You've got a girlfriend. You'll start spending.
I laugh. She's not that way.
We'll see.
Anything you need?
No.
Stay in touch?
Of course.
Good luck with your deals.
Goodbye, my son.
I hang up, leave, walk back downtown. Brooke is waiting for me. We're having dinner with Brooke's older sister, Courtney, and Courtney's husband. It's a test run for a potential meeting with her parents. We go to a fancy restaurant. I wear nice clothing, khakis and a blue shirt and a sport coat, the same clothing I wear when I'm carrying something on the L and pretend to be a commuter. We sit down, we're early. I'm nervous. I feel like an imposter in my outfit, like an actor in a costume, like I'm pretending to be something I'm not. Brooke and I talk about what I should admit and what I shouldn't admit. Brooke told me to be completely honest. She's right, I should be honest, but I want the sister to like me, and I know she probably won't if she knows about my past. I know in many ways I shouldn't give a shit. I am what I am. But I do give a shit. I don't want to embarrass her. We sit at our table. Wait for her sister to arrive. She's late. Brooke takes my hand. Speaks. You okay?
Nervous.
You? A little nervous. No need for you to be nervous. I'm gonna behave. I know you are, and for whatever it's worth, Courtney's probably more nervous than either of us. Why? I've told her about you. She's nervous and excited to meet you.
What did you tell her?
Just nice things. You have nothing to worry about. Brooke motions toward the door. I turn, see a man and a woman walking toward us. The man has dark curly hair, olive skin, is in his late 20s. The woman is a taller version of Brooke. Same blonde hair, same blue eyes, same skin, same lips. Same air of reserve, same air of wealth. She's slightly taller than her husband, who walks a step behind her. I stand, say hello, she smiles, says, "Hi, I'm Courtney, and this is my husband, Jay." I shake each of their hands, say, "I'm James," we sit down. The dinner is easy, comfortable. Courtney does most of the talking. She talks about her children, about her house on the North Shore, about how busy she is, about how much she loves her husband. Just before our food arrives, she asks if I mind if she orders wine. I say no. She asks how I'm doing with everything. I know Brooke has told her about rehab. I say, well, she orders a glass of Chardonnay. She talks all the way through dinner, doesn't touch her food. I eat a steak. It's great, but I'm still hungry. She doesn't touch her salmon. If I could, I'd reach over the table and take it and eat it. We finish dinner. Her husband picks up the bill. We walk out together. She gives me a hug, gives Brooke a hug. We say goodbye. They leave. Brooke and I start walking back to her apartment. She speaks.
That went well.
You think?
Yeah, she liked you.
How do you know that? If she didn't like you, she would have scowled at you and complained about everything and tortured Jay.
I laugh. Poor fella.
Poor fella, my ass. He knew what he was getting into when he married her.
I laugh again.
I'm glad it went well. Glad you think she likes me. She'll report back to my parents and tell them that you're completely acceptable.
Which is good.
Very good. I motioned toward my sport coat. Now that I've done well, can I take this thing off? No. No, why not? I've never seen you dressed up before. I think you look handsome. Humor me and wear it until we get back to my place. I smile, take her hand. A warmth and a chill roll through my body. They settle softly, they linger, they scare me. I feel very close to Brooke, strong with her hand in mind, invincible to the rest of the world, but fragile to her. Vulnerable to her. She could hurt me. She could hurt me. Nothing else but she could hurt me. We walk back to her place. We go to Brooke's room. Brooke shuts the door, lights a candle. I sit down on the bed. She sits next to me. We stare at each other for a moment. Silently stare at each other. We both start moving forward. We close our eyes. Reach. Meet. Hands, breath, lips, bodies meet. There is something more this time. Walls are down. Armor discarded. Defenses breached. There is something deeper, faster, more urgent in our hands, in our breath, in our lips, in our bodies. We stand. Her hands run beneath my shirt, my hands beneath her shirt, around her back. We briefly separate. My shirt comes off. We lie down. I can smell her hair. Soap on her skin. Perfume beneath her wrist. Her lips are soft against me. Her hands firm. I take her shirt off. My chest against her chest, I can feel her heart beating. I'm close to her, in body and elsewhere. I'm close to her. I feel weak, fragile, vulnerable. She could hurt me. I'm close to her. I'm scared. She could hurt me. I can feel her heartbeat. I can feel my heartbeat. She could hurt me. I can't go through with this. She could hurt me. I can't handle this anymore. Anymore, she could hurt me. I want to kiss her. Keep kissing her. I haven't felt this good since Lily. Since Lily. I want to keep kissing her. I start to panic. I'm fucking terrified. I pull away. Why are you stopping? I can't. What's wrong? I just can't. What did I do? Nothing. Did I do something wrong? I'm sorry. For what? I'm just freaking out. Why? I'm just freaking out. I'm sorry. She stares at me. I look away. I'm embarrassed, ashamed, confused. My hands are shaking. My body is shaking. Her arms are around me. She can feel me shaking. I hate myself. She could hurt me, like Lily hurt me. I'm fucking terrified. What's wrong? I can't look at her. What's wrong, James? I shake my head, bite my lip. I don't want to cry in front of her. I don't want to cry. She pulls me toward her, pulls my head into her shoulder, holds me there. I want to love her. I want to give myself to her. I want to take her in every way. I want to be normal with someone, to have a normal life with someone. I don't want to be scared to love, to give it and receive it. I'm tired of being fucking alone. I can't do it, and I'm ashamed of myself. I speak, softly speak. It doesn't have anything to do with you. Something before? Yeah. Do you want to talk about it? No. We can just lie here. You don't have to talk. I'm sorry. Just lie here. We lie on her bed, our legs entwined. She holds my head against her shoulders. My heart slows, I stop shaking. Walls are up, armor on, defenses manned. She holds me, I feel secure, I'm safe again. She leans, kisses my forehead. You want a cigarette? Yeah. She pulls herself away from me. She stands, walks to her dresser, opens a drawer, takes out a t-shirt. She puts it on and leaves the room. I sit up, lean against the headboard. I take a deep breath, stare at the sheets. I hate my weakness. Hate my fear. Hate myself. Brooke comes back into the room. She's carrying a pack of cigarettes, an ashtray, a bottle of water. She sits in front of me, hands me a cigarette. I take it, she lights it. Thank you. You want some water? I take the bottle, take a sip. Thank you. You okay? I shake my head. No, not at all. I'm totally fucked up. Is there anything I can do? I wish there was. I'm sorry. Don't be sorry. You've got nothing to be sorry about. She leans forward, kisses my forehead. She moves so that she is sitting next to me. We smoke our cigarettes, take alternating sips from the bottle of water. I stare at the sheets, occasionally look over at her. She stares at the sheets, occasionally looks over at me. We finish our cigarettes, put them out. She takes the ashtray, sets it on the nightstand next to the bed. She looks over at me, speaks. You want to go to sleep? Yeah. We lie down next to each other. She leans forward again, gently kisses my lips, puts her arms around me, lays her head on my chest. I watch her fall asleep. After about an hour, I get out of her bed. I walk into the living room, light a cigarette, stare out of her window, stare at the lake. Smoke and stare at the lake. It is quiet, black, still. I wish I could let her help me. I wish she could do something for me. I smoke and stare at the lake. I'm scared. She could hurt me. She could hurt me. I don't sleep well. I leave early the next morning. I kiss Brooke goodbye, start walking, try to walk off my fear. It doesn't work. I walk all day, walk until my legs hurt, my feet hurt. It doesn't work. I go back to my apartment, read the Tao. It doesn't work. I tell myself I have nothing to be scared of. It doesn't work. I tell myself she's not going to hurt me. It doesn't matter. I tell myself I can deal with whatever comes. I've been through worse, endured worse. It doesn't go away. Brooke calls, asks me how I'm doing. I tell her okay. She asks if I want to meet her at a bar. She's going out with Heather. I say yes. Maybe I'll see her and feel differently. Maybe. Maybe. I take a shower, change clothes, walk to the local option. I get there, I see Brooke and Heather sitting at a table. I walk over to them. As I walk, I see Brooke looks upset. I arrive. I speak. Hi. Hi. Hi, Heather. Hi, James. I look at Brooke. How are you doing? Brooke glances at Heather, looks back at me. I'm fine. I pull up a chair, sit across from her. What's wrong?
Nothing.
Something's wrong.
It doesn't matter.
Yes, it does. She shakes her head.
Just tell me.
She glances at Heather again, looks back at me. We were standing at the bar, and some guy came up next to me and grabbed my ass. I asked him what he was doing, and he said, "Grabbing your sweet ass," and he did it again.
Is he here?
It doesn't matter. Is he here? Heather points to three guys standing against the bar, speaks. He's the one in the middle. I stand up. I'll be right back. Brooke speaks. What are you going to do? Don't worry about it. I start walking toward the three against the bar. A gate inside of me opens. I am flooded with rage, fear, aggression, an urge to protect and an urge to inflict, an overwhelming urge to destroy, destroy, destroy. I know this feeling, lived with it for years. The fury is back. I don't like it. It almost killed me before. It is back. My heart starts pounding. I clench my fist, clench my jaw. Every cell in my body tenses, prepares, tightens up, coils. My mind slows down, my eyes focus on the three men leaning against the bar. They are all about the same size as me. They are facing the bar, facing away from me. They wear pressed khakis, leather shoes, stiff starched shirts, expensive watches. They have clean-shaven faces and short, conservative haircuts. They may wipe me out. I may wipe them out. Maybe nothing happens. I'm trying to control myself, trying to prepare. I stop a couple of feet behind them, speak. Excuse me. No response. I raise my voice. Excuse me. One of the others, not the one in the middle, turns around. Yeah? I want to talk to your friend. He taps his friend on the shoulder, motions toward me. The one in the middle turns around. Yeah? My heart is pounding. I motion to Brooke and Heather, who are watching us. Don't touch her again. Don't touch her friend. His friends turn toward me. What? She doesn't want you touching her again. It was inappropriate the first time. There shouldn't be a second time. Who are you? Doesn't matter. Did she ask you to talk to me? Doesn't matter. I stare at him. He looks back at me. I'm nervous, tense, scared, ready to go, not sure what I'm going to do about his friends. He looks at each of them, looks back at me. There are three of us and one of you. I stare at him. Three of them, one of me. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't care how many of you there are. Don't touch her again. We stare at each other. I see Derek reach beneath the bar for a short, thick wooden club. He walks toward us, speaks. James? I look up at him. There a problem? I look back at the one in the middle. He looks toward Derek, sees the club. He speaks. No problem. He turns back to me. Tell your friend I'm sorry. Thank you. I walk back to the table, sit down with Brooke and Heather. Brooke speaks. What happened? He told me to tell you he's sorry. What did you say to him? It doesn't matter. He's not going to touch you again. She takes my hand. Thank you. Don't worry about it. She can feel me shaking. Are you okay? I'll calm down in a few minutes. She smiles. Thank you for doing it. I nod. Sure. I sit with them, drink a cola or two, smoke, wait to calm down. My hand stops shaking, but the calm never comes. The fury stays with me, taunts me, says, drink, motherfucker, says, destroy, destroy, says, I'm going to hurt you. I haven't felt like this, felt the fury like this since rehab. I already feel fragile and vulnerable. I don't want to be in a bar right now. I want to make the fury go away, and alcohol destroys it. I want to drink. With each moment, the need grows. Grows. Each moment is more of a struggle to resist. I need to leave. I want to drink. I need to leave. I wait for the three at the bar to leave first. I don't want Brooke alone with the one in the middle. They leave after an hour. I watch them go. I wait 5 minutes, stand, look at Brooke, speak. I gotta go. What's wrong? I just can't be here right now. I'll come with you. Stay here. Have a good night. I need to be alone. I lean over, kiss her goodbye, walk out of the bar. I start walking down the street. I want to calm down. I want this fury to leave me. I want to feel safe. I want the urges to go away. This shouldn't be so difficult. This shouldn't be bothering me. I know my problems are nothing. I know I've been through worse, seen worse, felt worse. I know my problems are minuscule and pathetic compared to other problems in the world. I know I should get the fuck over them and deal. Knowing, however, doesn't make a difference. If anything, knowing just makes me feel stupid, feel weak, feel worse. I walk for hours, for the rest of the night. I walk and I look and I don't find anything, no answers, nothing. I'm the same person, feel the same as when I walked out of the bar. I don't want to admit it, but I know I can't go on. I'm not ready to be with anyone but myself. She could hurt me. I am protective of her. Feelings that strong are dangerous for me. I'm scared. I go to her apartment. I say hello to the doorman. He knows me now. I go upstairs, knock on the door. It's 9 a.m. She should be up. She answers the door in her pajamas. She smiles, speaks.
You don't look so good.
I'm not. She invites me inside. I walk into her apartment. I walk into her living room, sit down on the couch. She walks into the kitchen. You want a cup of coffee?
Sure.
She pours two cups, puts some milk in her cup, walks in the living room. She hands me one of the cups, sits down next to me. She kisses me on the cheek, pulls back.
You look sad.
I shrug.
What's wrong?
I look down, shake my head. I hate myself. Hate my weakness. Hate that I can't go on. She puts her hand on my hand.
What's wrong?
I look up, shake my head, bite my lip. She watches me for a moment, reaches for her cigarettes.
You want to smoke?
I nod. She hands me a cigarette, lights it, lights one for herself, looks at me.
You can't go on, can you?
No.
Why?
I just can't. Did I do something? I shake my head, bite my lip. I don't want to cry.
Then what's wrong?
I'm just fucked up. Confused and scared and fucked up. A tear starts rolling down one of my cheeks. It doesn't have anything to do with you. Both cheeks. And I wish it wasn't this way. Tears down both cheeks, she nods, leans forward, puts her arms around me, speaks. I thought this might happen. I could see you hurting all the time and wanted to do something for you. I don't know what happened to you before, but I'm sorry. And I hope you can get over it. And if you need a friend, you know where I am. I let her hold me, and I cry. I'm sick of fucking crying. There has been too much in the last year. Too much. I'm sick of crying. Brooke holds me and lets me, and even though nothing is right and I hate myself for leaving her, I feel okay because she is holding me. I cry. I'm so fucking sick of it. I cry. I find Leonard's card. Five names, five numbers. I start at the top, pick up my phone, dial the first number. It rings, rings, rings. A voice.
Yeah?
Mr. Sinatra available?
No.
Voice hangs up the phone. I dial the next number. Ring, ring. A voice.
Yellow.
Mr. Kennedy available?
No.
Next number. Mr. Bob Hope, please?
He's not here.
Next number. Joe DiMaggio around?
Nope.
Final number. May I speak to Leonard?
Who's this?
James.
He's not here. You want to leave a message?
Tell him I called.
Will do.
Thanks. I hang up. 5 minutes later, my phone rings. I pick it up. Hello?
My son. You called?
Yeah.
What's wrong?
Nothing. I want to go back to work.
Why?
I just do.
You left her, didn't you?
Why do you think that?
I can hear it.
Yeah, I left her.
I'm sorry.
Shit happens.
Don't try to be cool with me. You're upset. I can hear it in your voice.
You're right. I'm upset. Nothing to do but move on. Try to keep myself occupied. That's why I want to work.
I'll see what we got. Maybe try to come visit later this week. Cheer your ass up.
That would be cool.
You need anything?
What I need, I can't have.
That's the fucking truth. Keep away.
Call me if you're coming.
I will.
Thanks, Leonard.
Goodbye, my son.
I hang up. What I need, I can't have. I drink coffee, smoke cigarettes, read the Tao, go for long walks, wander the galleries of the art museum, talk to Lily, don't sleep. Time moves slowly. What I need, I can't have. I want to stay occupied. I wait for the phone to ring. Knock on my door. It's around noon. I'm lying in bed, staring at the ceiling. I get up, knock again. I stand in front of the door. Who is it? I hear Leonard's voice.
Mr. Happy and his cheer squad.
I laugh, open the door. Leonard and the snapper walk into my apartment. I speak. This is a surprise. Leonard speaks.
We got some business in New York. We set up our travel schedule so we have an 8-hour layover.
I look at Snapper. How you doing, Snap?
I'm the fucking Chia Squad. Nothing better than that.
I laugh again. Leonard speaks.
Throw on some nice clothes and grab your credit card. We have an appointment.
Where?
Surprise.
What are we doing?
Bringing some beauty into your life.
What's that mean?
It means throw on some nice clothes and grab your credit card. We have an appointment.
I need to take a shower.
Fine. We'll wait.
I go into the bathroom, take a quick shower, go to my room, put on my nice clothes. Leonard and the snapper and I leave. We walk to the curb, get into a large white Benz, start driving downtown. Leonard asks me if I'm hungry. I say no. He says he's hungry. We stop at a small restaurant. He eats a green salad. He finishes the salad. We get back into the car, drive into the Gallery District of Chicago, park the car in the street, get out of the car, start walking down the street. Leonard speaks.
Do you know what happened to this neighborhood a couple of years ago?
I have no idea.
The art market crashed, and it, like every gallery district in the country, got fucking crushed. Do you know what that means for us?
I have no idea.
It means most of these galleries are on the verge of bankruptcy, and they're desperate to sell their inventories, and they're willing to make very, very, very good fucking deals. Do you know why we're here?
To buy art?
More specifically.
I don't know.
We're here to find you a Picasso.
You're kidding me. Leonard looks at Snapper.
Am I kidding him?
Snapper looks at me. He ain't fucking kidding you. I look at Leonard. I can't afford a Picasso.